Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Forgiving by Laverl Spencer, narrated by Emily Sutton Smith. Chapter 1. Dakota Territory, September 1876. The Cheyenne stage was 6 hours late, pulling Sarah Merritt into Deadwood by 10 p.m. rather than in the late afternoon. The rig rumbled away and left her standing in the dark on a muddy street before a crude saloon. Several crude saloons, an entire street full of them. The noise was appalling, a mixture of shouts, laughter, banjo music, and brawling. And the smell, ye gods, did nobody pick up the animal dung? Horses and mules lined the hitching rails. Nearby, one of them was snoring. Sarah backed up and squinted at the sign overhead. Eureka Saloon. She glanced down at the place. A frame building, unpainted, roughly constructed, and crowded by a similar structure on the left and a log building on the right. The door to the Eureka was closed, but through its window, murky coal oil lantern light tumbled down a set of wooden steps leading directly from the building to the mud, without the benefit of a boardwalk. Sarah glanced down at the trunks and bandbox sitting at her ankle, wondering what to do. Before she could decide, three gunshots cracked, a mule brayed, the door of the Eureka flapped open, and a crowd of rowdies burst from inside and stumbled down the steps into the street. Sarah snatched her bandbox and scuttled to the shadow of the saloon wall.
"Kill that claim jumper, Soaky!" someone bellowed. "Fix his face so only his mama could love him."
A fist smacked against a jaw. A man stumbled backward and somersaulted over Sarah's trunks, picked himself up, and vaulted at his opponent without noticing over what he'd stumbled. The rabble milled this way and that, shouting, brandishing their fists and beer mugs. A man thumped into the side of a mule, which brayed and skittered sideways.
"Kill the son of a bitch!"
"Yeah, kill him!"
Two onlookers clambered onto Sarah's cowhide trunks to get a better view.
"No! Get off there!" she shouted.
When she moved, one of the drunken revelers spotted her.
"Mother of God, it's a woman. You hear me, boys? It's a woman!"
The fracas ended as if a fire bell had clanged.
"A woman? A woman?"
The word was passed from one man to another as, like fog, they crept close, hemming her in. She stood with her back to the saloon wall, the hair on her nape prickling, clutching the ribbons of her bandbox, while the men gawked at her skirts, hat, and face, as if they'd never before seen a female. Summoning a note of bravado, she greeted,
"Good evening, gentlemen."
Silent, they continued gawking.
"Could anyone tell me where to find the home of Mrs. Hossiter?"
"Hossiter?"
a croaky voice repeated.
"Anyone heard of a woman named Hossiter?"
The crowd mumbled and shook their heads.
"Afraid not, ma'am. What's her husband's name?"
"I'm afraid I don't know, but my sister's name is Adelaide Merritt, and she works for them."
"Nobody named Merritt around here. Nobody named Hossiter, either. Can't be more than 25 women in the whole gulch, and we know every one of them, don't we, boys?"
A murmur crescendoed and faded.
"What's your sister do?"
"Domestic work." And she distinctly said the name of her landlady was Mrs. Hossiter.
"Landlady, you say?"
A spark of deeper interest perked up the fellow's voice. He spread his arms wide and pressed back the throng.
"Here, boys, don't crowd the little lady. Let her move out into the light where we can see her better. My name is Shorty Reese, miss, and I'll do what I can to help you find your sister."
He doffed his hat, took her elbow, and drew her to the foot of the steps where the lantern light ranged from the open door. By it, she noted he was middle-aged, with dirty clothing, seamed face, and one missing tooth. "If you'll let me through, those trunks are mine. I have a picture of my sister. Maybe one of you will recognize her."
They stepped back and allowed Sarah to open the buckles of one of her trunks, from which she produced a sepia daguerreotype of herself and Adelaide, taken 5 years before. She handed it to Shorty Reese. "She's 21 and has blonde hair and green eyes." He turned it toward the light, cocked his head, and studied it.
"Why, this is Eve," he pronounced. "One of the upstairs girls had Miss Rose's, and she don't have no blonde hair. Her hair's as black as the end of number 14 stope."
"Eve?"
"That's right. Ain't this Eve, boys?"
The picture was passed around.
"That's Eve, all right."
"Yep, that's her." "That's Eve,"
the picture returned to Sarah.
"You can find her up at Rose's, the north end of Main Street on the left. You mind my asking, miss, if you plan to work as an upstairs girl, too?"
"No, sir, I plan to start publishing a newspaper."
"A newspaper?"
"That's right, as soon as my press arrives, if it hasn't already."
"But you're a woman."
"Yes, Mr. Reese, I am." Sarah returned the picture to the trunk and buckled the straps. "Thank you very much for your help. Now, if you could point me in the direction of a hotel, I'd be ever so grateful."
"Help her with her trunks, boys," Reese shouted. "Let's get her over to the Grand Central."
"No, please, I..."
"Why, it'd be our pleasure, miss. We don't get a chance to see a lady hardly at all. Like I said, can't be more than a couple dozen of the fairer sex in Deadwood, if that."
Though she little relished making her entrance into Deadwood in the company of the Eureka Saloon's clientele, she had no idea how she'd carry two trunks to the hotel on her own. It struck her, too, that as a newspaper woman, she would be prudent to avoid alienating any of the townspeople on her first night in town. This was a gold town. Gold spelled money, and money meant rowdiness. Any one of these men could be the owner of the lot she might want to buy, or the building she might want to rent, or a member of the town board, for that matter. "Thank you, Mr. Reese. I appreciate your help." She found herself buffeted along by the noisy lot, who hoisted her trunks onto their shoulders and escorted her to the other end of the block.
"You're in luck," Reese said,
climbing the steps of a tall, false-fronted building with the first boardwalk she'd seen.
"The Grand Central just opened last week."
They took her right inside, across a Spartan lobby, to the desk, where they formed a circle around her, grinning, while presenting her to the night clerk.
"Got a customer for you, Sam. This here's Miss Merritt. Just came in on the Cheyenne stage."
Miss Merritt?
His face grew scarlet as he extended a hand which was limp and moist as cooked cabbage. He was a chinless little man, with round spectacles and an effeminate manner, dressed in a brown plaid suit with his hair parted in the middle.
"I'm happy to make your acquaintance."
"This is Sam Peoples."
Shorty filled in for Peoples, who was too flustered by her appearance to supply his own name.
"Hello, Mr. Peoples."
His blush made him look combustible, and for a moment he forgot to withdraw his hand. Self-consciously, Sarah withdrew hers, unaccustomed to creating such a stir.
"She's gonna start up a newspaper."
"A newspaper? My, my. Then we'd better take good care of her, hadn't we?"
Peoples forced a nervous laugh. He dipped a black pen and extended it her way while revolving the hotel register to her face. Signing, Sarah felt the entire gallery of men watching. When she finished, she gave Peoples a smile and the pen.
"Welcome to the Grand Central," he said. "That'll be $1.50 for the night."
"In advanced?"
"Yes, in gold dust, if you please."
He touched the gold scale at his elbow and left it nodding. She stood straight as a lodgepole and fixed her eyes on the clerk's spectacles.
"Mr. Peoples, I've just spent 6 nights and 5 days on the stagecoach from Cheyenne. Given all the robberies that have been happening along the stage routes, do you honestly believe I'd be fool enough to carry my money with me in the form of gold?"
Peoples' face turned brighter, and he glanced helplessly at the men.
I'm sorry, Miss Merritt. I'm just the night clerk here. I don't own the hotel, but it's our policy to accept only guests who pay in advance, and gold dust is our legal tender out here.
Very well. She set her bandbox on the desk and began untying its ribbons. All my money is in the form of Wells Fargo certificates. If you can cash one into gold dust, I'd be happy to pay in advance. From a black organdy pouch, she extracted a $100 certificate and offered it to Peoples. Again, he glanced at the men, his face crimson.
I don't keep that kind of gold around either. You can cash it in the morning at the bank, however.
And in the meantime... She fixed him with a determined stare. One of the onlookers said,
You gonna let a lady sleep on the streets, Peoples?
Mr. Winters gave me orders.
The more flustered the clerk became, the more he stuttered.
She could sleep in the lobby, but it's the best I can do.
Lobby?
A leather pouch landed on the desk beside the gold scale.
Take it out of there.
Another pouch joined it.
We're out of here.
And another, until there were nearly a dozen lying on the high counter. Sarah turned to the men behind her, with a hand spread on her chest.
Thank you all so much, she said sincerely. But I can't accept your gold.
Why not? There's plenty more where that come from, ain't there, boys?
Hell yes. El Dorado.
They punched the air in hallelujah and let out a roar. Several of them hoorahed, lifting their beer mugs, then took swigs. Sam Peoples selected a pouch and carefully weighed out the gold. At $20 per ounce, $1.50 worth scarcely looked like enough to have created this embarrassing contretemps. When the pouches were reclaimed by their owners, the gold proved to have come out of the sack owned by a tall, lanky man with thinning dark hair and a bleary-eyed smile. He had a prominent Adam's apple, watery red eyes, and he wove back on his heels as if struck by a wall of wind.
Thank you, Mr.
The man continued weaving and grinning in his alcoholic euphoria.
Bradigan, Reese told her. His name's Patrick Bradigan.
Thank you, Mr. Bradigan.
Bradigan listed toward Sarah, wearing an expression like a scratched cat, his squinting eyes scarcely registering what he saw.
I shall repay you tomorrow as soon as I've visited the bank.
He gave a floppy salute, and someone stuffed his gold pouch into his pocket.
Where can I find you?
Least I can do for a pretty lady, Bradigan mumbled. Bradigan tipped a few tonight,
one of his cohorts explained.
He won't know the difference whether you pay him back or not.
They would have carried her trunks upstairs to her room, but for the protests of Sam Peoples.
You'll wake up all my customers. Gentlemen, please get back to the saloon where you belong.
All your customers are still in the saloons.
Then get back and join them.
He sent the boys shuffling off with a doffing of hats and a chorus of good nights for the pretty little lady, which Sarah was not. She was 5'10" in her stocking feet, with plain brown hair, a nose she considered a trifle too long, and lips too thin to be remarkable. She did have passably attractive blue eyes, vivid and thick-lashed. Still nobody with all their faculties would mistake her for pretty. She was a long-faced woman who in all her life had never attracted as much male attention as during the last quarter hour.
I'm giving you a room on the third floor. It's warmest up there,
said the ingratiating Peoples, carrying the first of her trunks. He led her through a building whose primary recommendation was size. Big it was, but raw in every sense of the word, without a plastered wall in evidence, not even in the lobby, where the windows were bare of curtains and the only spots of brightness were provided by the china cuspidor and the calendar behind the desk, sporting the picture of a waterfall. The floors were constructed of bare pine planks, still emitting the smell of newly milled lumber. The walls were of green studs, still oozing sap, between which the clabbered siding showed, replete with knotholes that seemed to peer back like empty eye sockets. The stairs, situated just behind the desk, led up to the mouth of a dark, narrow hall. Midway along it, a single coal-oil lantern hung from a wall bracket. On the floor beneath it sat a covered china slop jar. He led her to a room a third of the way down on the left and opened a door made of planks on a Z-shaped frame.
"Water's in the can outside the door, mornings only, and you can dump your slop in the jar down the hall. Matches are on the wall to your left. I'll be right back with your other trunk."
When he was gone, she found the tin match holder and lit the lantern beside her bed. By its smoky orange light, she perused the room. Lord in heaven, what have I gotten into? The walls were as stark as those in the lobby, bare planks pocked by knotholes through which drafts blew. Overhead, the ceiling rafters showed. The window and floor were unadorned, the bed made of tubular brown tin, the ordinary table beside it holding only the lamp. No runner or doily, nothing to appeal to the feminine eye. Not even a coverlet on the bed, only the spruce green woolen blanket and a pillow which, thank heavens, had a muslin slip cover. She turned back the blanket and found muslin sheets and a real mattress, stuffed with straw and cotton, and breathed a sigh of relief. There was a commode stand with a pitcher and bowl on top. She opened the door beneath and peered inside to find a covered china commode. She had just closed the door when Sam Peoples returned with her second trunk.
"I haven't eaten since noon," Sarah told him. "Would there be anything to eat?"
"Our dining room is closed, I'm sorry, but we'll be open for breakfast."
"Oh," she said, disappointed.
He backed toward the door.
"There aren't many women in Deadwood, as you know. You'd best bar the door."
He indicated a heavy wooden 4x4 standing in the corner.
"Good night, then. May I say it's a pleasure having you."
"Thank you, Mr. Peoples. Good night."
When he closed the door, she studied the crudely hewn wooden brackets on either side. The bar was heavy. She struggled to lift and drop it into place, then turned to face the room with a sigh. She dropped to the edge of the bed, bounced once tentatively, and fell back with one arm crooked above her head. Her eyelids closed. Of Sarah's 5 nights on the road, only 2 had been spent in beds. 2 she'd slept wrapped in her own blanket on the floors of log shacks serving as stage relay stations, and 1 on board the stagecoach itself, folded like a carpenter's rule on the hard horsehair seat. Her last filling meal had been yesterday noon at Hill City, where she'd had bread, coffee, and venison. Today's fare had been bacon and cold coffee at breakfast, and at noon, dry biscuits accompanied by water from Box Elder Creek. She'd taken her last bath in St. Louis 9 days ago, and smelled, she realized, like an old horse's hoof.
"Get up, Sarah. Your day's not over."
Suppressing a groan, she forced her tired body to bend and shoved herself to her feet. The pitcher and bowl were empty. Out in the hall, the water tin was, too. "Mornings only," she remembered, and went back inside to whack the dust from her woolen suit as best she could, recomb the sides of her hair, and wipe off her face with a dry cloth. She replaced her hat, rammed the pin through her chignon, took her organdy pouch containing the Wells Fargo certificates, her father's watch, and her pen and ink, and left the room. As she passed through the lobby, she startled Peoples, who advised,
"Ma'am, you shouldn't be out on the street alone after dark."
"I've traveled clear from St. Louis alone, Mr. Peoples. I'm perfectly capable of taking care of myself. Furthermore, my sister is someplace in this town, and I haven't seen her for 5 years. I intend to do so tonight, if I have to wake her up to do it."
Outside, the din from the saloons still rattled up and down the thoroughfare. The boardwalks proved intermittent, built or not built at the whim of each lot owner who directed a building. Striding down the center of Main Street, She made a mental note to write an editorial about standardizing the height and width of the boardwalks and making them compulsory for every building along Main. And street lamps. The town needed street lamps and a paid lamplighter to tend them at dusk and dawn. Ah, her work was cut out. In spite of the clamor, the town had an eerie feeling lit solely by blobs of light from the saloon windows falling onto the row of sleeping horses. She looked up. Only a narrow corridor of starlight shone overhead. The sides of the gulch hung like a widow's curtains, closed against intrusion, isolating Deadwood from the rest of the world. In the dark, she made out the blacker shapes of pines high on the steep slopes, separated from town by the paler spots where the hills had been denuded. A few pines straggled in places to the very edges of the street. The wind whistled through them and down the ravine, a cold, late September wind that fluttered her skirt and stirred the scent of fresh animal droppings. Sarah covered her nose as she hurried along, formulating yet another editorial. She passed a tin shop, grocers, barbers, tobacconist, hardware, uncountable saloons, and, surprisingly, a huge theater, the Langrieche, where lamps were lit and the bill announced Flies in the Weed by John Broom. Smiling, Sarah paused and reread the bill. A hint of culture, after all. To her amazement, in the next block on the opposite side of the street, she passed another theater, the Bella Union. Her spirits took their first upswing since she'd arrived in Deadwood. But where was the church? The school? Surely in a town this size there must be some children. She would make it a point to find out how many. At the far end of Main, where it took a swing to the right, the wooden structures petered out and the gulch bottlenecked from three streets into one. Beyond that point, fires glimmered in the distance, dots of hazel light between the paler squares of lantern-lit tents that lay scattered along the cut like the beads of a broken rosary. Where the three streets of town merged, foot traffic picked up. Men. All men. They stared at Sarah and stopped in their tracks as she passed. Men. Noisy men. Milling about the last string of buildings on the left whose doors opened and closed constantly, releasing peals of piano music and laughter. All six buildings looked alike, narrow, unadorned, with heavy draperies drawn across the windows, windowless doors. There must be some mistake, she thought, stopping before Roses, glancing at the names of the adjacent establishments. The Green Door, Goldie's, the Mother Lode, the Dove's Coat, and Angeline's. They appeared to be saloons. Nevertheless, she decided the safest course was to knock on the door of Roses. She did, then clutched her money packet against her jacket buttons with both hands and waited. Given the noise inside, it seemed little wonder nobody answered. A creak purled somewhere behind her. A man left the place next door and disappeared into the dark in the direction of the tents. Unaware that she stood behind him, he broke wind noisily, pausing and canting his left buttock before the sound died, and he moved on. She knocked again, harder.
"Nobody knocks on the door at Roses," a deep voice said behind her. "Go right on in."
She jumped and spun, pressing a hand to her heart.
"Good heavens, you scared me."
"I didn't mean to."
A tall man stood close behind her. The dark hid his face.
"Tell me, is this the only Roses in Deadwood?"
"The one and only. You're new in town," he speculated with a grin in his voice.
"Yes, I'm looking for my sister, Adelaide. I'm told she's an upstairs maid at Rose Hossiter's, but it seems she's changed her name to Eve."
"I know Eve."
"You do?"
"I know Eve very well, as a matter of fact. So you're her sister?"
"Yes, Sarah Merritt. I've just arrived from St. Louis."
She extended her gloved hand. He took it in a hard, protracted squeeze while she peered up, trying to make out his face in the deep shadow of his 10-gallon hat.
"Noah Campbell."
"Mr. Campbell," she returned politely.
When she would have withdrawn her hand, he continued gripping it.
Well, Miss Merritt, this is an unexpected pleasure. Allow me to escort you inside and introduce you to Rose. She'll know just where your sister is.
As if executing an allemand left, he opened the door and swung her inside, dropping her hand as the door thumped shut behind them.
Welcome to Rose's, Miss Merritt, he said at her shoulder, flourishing an open palm at the room.
As if plunged into a nightmare, she stood rooted, absorbing impressions. Hazy lantern light, garish parlor furniture, a parrot sidling left and right on a perch, squawking,
"Dollar a minute, dollar a minute."
Thick tasseled draperies, the smell of stale whiskey and hard-boiled eggs, the sting of cigar smoke, a lot of men in stages of semi-drunkenness, and one blousy woman dressed entirely in emerald green, with carmine lips and a feather in her red hair. She possessed an acre of cleavage resembling a baby's bare buttocks, an obese woman with a smoking cigar between her teeth who stood with her arm around the shoulders of a big, bearded man while he fondled her rump. Sarah spun to Noah Campbell.
There must be some mistake. This isn't a private home.
No, ma'am. Hardly.
For the first time, she saw his face. He had a bushy auburn mustache, a roundish nose with a faint dent at the end, and grinning gray eyes that lighted on Sarah's and lingered.
Come along. I'll introduce you to Rose.
He put a hand on her spine and she balked.
No, I told you my sister is an upstairs maid and her landlady's name is Mrs. Rose Hossiter, and please remove your hand from my back.
He obliged, then stood back, studying her indulgently while his grin lingered.
Getting last-minute jitters, are you?
This place is horrible. It looks like a brothel.
He glanced idly at the woman in green, then back at Sarah.
Tell you what.
His eyes roved lazily down her torso and back up.
I'm a pretty conventional fellow. Rose will vouch for me. I like it straight, no rough stuff. No more than 2 or 3 drinks beforehand. I pay good in pure gold. I don't have any diseases or lice. And I already took my bath. You can tell Rose that you've already lined up your first customer. How would that be?
I beg your pardon?
Sarah felt the blood surge to her face. The skin across her chest felt taut as a sausage casing, and it took superior poise to keep from slapping his face.
I understand, he added in a confidential tone, taking her arm as if to guide her toward Rose. Your first night in a new place and you're bound to be nervous, but there's no reason to make up stories about Adelaide being your sister.
Adelaide is my sister.
She wrenched her arm free and turned upon him furiously.
And stop touching me, I said.
He raised both palms as if she'd drawn a six-shooter.
All right, I'm sorry.
His voice turned irritated.
You women are all so damned quirky. Never met a one of you who wasn't.
I am not one of those women, she spit, mortified.
Several men had risen and encroached.
Hey, Noah, what you got there? Hooey, she's a tall one. Nice long legs. I like them long-legged ones. About time we was getting some fresh flesh around here.
What's your name, sugar?
One of them with a beard like a billy goat reached out as if to touch her, and Sarah recoiled, bumping back against Campbell, who gripped her arms to steady her. She lurched from his touch and hid a shudder, fighting the urge to crouch and raise her fists. The men inched closer. They were, for the most part, loud and ogling, with wet lips and florid cheeks, hair that needed cutting, nails that needed cleaning, and necks that needed scrubbing. Most were old and brazen, but some were pitiably young and blushing as much as she. At the sudden stir, Rose glanced over and raised one eyebrow.
Hey, Noah, one of the men asked. Where to find her? Out on the street, Noah replied. But back off, Lewis. Tonight she's spoken for.
Rose was bearing down on them with one hand on her fat hip and her breasts leading the way like a pair of pink cannonballs. Her face wore an expression of hauteur, and she carried her cigar in the crook of one finger. She parted the crowd as a plow parts soil, stopped before Sarah, and assessed her coldly, one pass, down and up, with contemptuous, putty-colored eyes. She drew a mouthful of cigar smoke, let it slither up her nostrils, and spoke, breathing a gray plume like the top of an Indian teepee.
"What have you got here, Noah?"
Sarah spoke up angrily. "Are you Rose Hossiter?" At close range, Rose's skin had the texture of cottage cheese.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?